From Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. There was a flurry of news reports after the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released information on Friday that they were investigating whether the bivalent Pfizer vaccine could be linked to a higher risk of stroke in people who are 65 years and older. The CDC said that several studies indicated it is very unlikely that there is a true clinical risk, and it was investigating the data. But the announcement, as you can imagine, prompted a lot of questions. So joining us today to make sense of this new information is Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Remember, if you have questions regarding public health, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Good to have you on the show, Dr. Pate.
Thanks, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, what did the CDC and the FDA say exactly on Friday about the Pfizer bivalent vaccine and stroke?
So the good news here is that of the things that worked really well during this pandemic, one of them is our safety monitoring system. And that safety monitoring system, which tracks adverse effects from medications, vaccines, all kinds of things. It's made up of a whole bunch of separate monitoring systems, and they look at a whole bunch of different things. What most people are familiar with, because the anti-vaxxers have distorted it and made such a play about, is VAERS, or the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. That's probably the biggest, but there's many different monitoring systems, including not just run by the United States, but some other public health organizations across the globe. What the CDC and FDA did was it came out very transparently, very early, in order to continue to promote that people can have confidence in our vaccine safety monitoring. So even though these vaccines have been out for more than 2 years, we still monitor them. And then the new bivalent vaccines that started getting in use around September, we're still monitoring. And so what this was one monitoring system that actually is probably the smallest subset of data. It's about 7 academic medical centers that report into it. And it showed a slight, what we call a safety signal. In other words, that it was seeing a little bit more of this kind of stroke. And it did seem that a lot of these people had bivalent. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because they only saw it in people over 65. Well, guess who gets strokes anyway? And of course, when the bivalent vaccine came out, you would expect older people to get it. So why I think it's not overly concerning is no other safety system in the U.S. or across the globe has detected this. And it only detected it for people that had gotten the Pfizer bivalent, not the Moderna, which is possible, but it is a little perplexing because they're the same general kind of vaccine. And so I think the FDA and CDC were being very transparent. They're going to discuss it at the FDA's independent committee, vaccine committee, on the 26th, and look into the data to see what they think. But most of us think this isn't going to amount to anything. But what it is, it's a signal that our safety monitoring systems are working. And I think the most impressive thing was when you remember back to now, more than probably a year and a half ago, when the FDA picked up less than a handful of complications associated with the J&J vaccine that did turn out to be an issue. And it was amazing that they caught it that early and with such few cases. So that this is a high point of our pandemic response.
So bottom line, Dr. Pate, Should people be concerned? Should they stop getting the Pfizer bivalent and get the Moderna? Best advice for folks right now, because even with everything that you just said, this is going to make people nervous.
Of course, of course. In fact, I just had a friend ask me yesterday, he needs to get the bivalent vaccine. He asked me, should he be worried about this? My answer is you should not be worried about this. And so let's just divide it up. If you already got the Pfizer bivalent, if you didn't have a problem, you're not going to, because all of these cases were seen soon after the bivalent vaccine. So, you know, if you got it back in September, October, don't worry. You're not even a suspect here. This second thing I told them is, look, if you're concerned, just go ahead and get the Moderna bivalent. And in fact, we've got not great, but a little bit of circumstantial evidence that it might be slightly better. So just go ahead and get the Moderna if you're worried about it. But my guess is what will happen is after the meeting on the 26th, they'll come out with a statement and tell us they've reviewed the data and they really don't see an issue here.
Okay, I want to switch gears a bit and talk about human metapneumovirus. Never heard of it. So what is it? And who's getting this?
Yeah. So, you know, there was a show, oh, I don't know, maybe a month ago when you were out, Gemma, and Samantha was grilling me. And she said, you know, all these people are complaining of this mysterious illness. They're testing negative for everything, but they're having this dreadful cough and it's lasting for a long time. And one of the things I mentioned is that it, you know, it's quite a few things it could be, but one of the things is this human metapneumovirus. This virus was just formally discovered in 2001, although we have evidence to suggest it's been circulating as far back as probably about 1958. It is another RNA virus. It is a respiratory virus. It is transmitted predominantly by droplets. So being close enough to somebody that they cough, sneeze, or whatever, and they have the virus and you get it. This virus is a virus that probably everybody listening to this show has had. They just don't know that they've had it, because by the time you're 5 years old, and certainly by the time you're 10, it's almost 100% of us have had it. The problem is, it's not, you don't develop a great immunity to it. And there's four different types of it. And so even a temporary immunity to one doesn't protect you against the other. So where do we see human metapneumovirus? We see it across the world. We, in the Northern Hemisphere, we typically see it, the big month is typically January, this month. But we can see it in winter to spring, although last year we had cases we detected even in July. So, it, you know, some of these respiratory viruses that are seasonal like this can even occur from time to time in other seasons. And what it typically does is it causes a cough. If you have asthma, it may exacerbate the asthma. It's nasal drainage, stuffy nose, and is quite miserable. And people often have a very long-term cough with it. It can be particularly dangerous to the elderly or immunocompromised, but most people recover and they don't really know what they had. So if you have a kid under five, particularly in daycare, and they've gotten a cough or some kind of cold in the last month or two, it's not out of the question they may have had this. There's other things like we've talked about RSV and so forth. But also older people, you can get it. And in fact, ironically, about 2 weeks ago, I got it. And it was absolutely dreadful. And it's the first time in my life I've been that sick for that long. I am just now really getting over it, and I'm not completely over it. In the space of 1 week, I was into my doctor's office, then the urgent, previously the urgent care, then my doctor's office, and then he sent me to the hospital because it was so bad in my case. So fortunately, lots better. My regret is that I gave it to my dear wife, and now she's struggling with it, but fortunately not as bad as I did. But it's no fun, and it's just a reminder to us all out there, there's a whole lot of different viruses out there right now. It's not all COVID, it's not all influenza, but there's a lot of things.
And before we go to break, let's talk a little bit more about this, you know, triple-demic that's going on. I mean, it could even be more than that, frankly, knowing now about this human metapneumovirus. But NPR was reporting this morning, and we heard a story right before we came on the air here, Dr. Pate, that the CDC released a report today, and a lot of the information was regarding children, in particular five and younger, getting numerous viruses all at once: RSV, the flu, and COVID. What are we seeing here? But also, what should we be taking from that?
Yeah, so several things. One is that, and we've talked about this on the show before, Gemma, it is possible to be what we call co-infected. In other words, to have more than one organism causing an infection. So, particularly dangerous in younger kids is co-infection of COVID and influenza. They tend to do better than if they only had either one. But there's other things you can be co-infected with COVID and RSV, RSV and influenza. That's been known for a while. And it's not just kids. It can happen to adults. But, you know, what I've bemoaned for some time is that we really, and I certainly understand that there's no appetite for masks, which obviously worked. We didn't have any of this problem in the fall and winter of 2020. It worked, but I understand there's not an appetite for masks, but there's so much that we could do to make daycares and schools safer and decrease the spread of all these viruses with just air handling, the ventilation, filtration, UV light. There's a lot of things that can be done, and they don't have to be particularly expensive. And I was very regretful that we didn't take the opportunity to use a lot of those funds that we got from the federal government back in 2020 and 21 to make these kind of investments in our school. And it would be in their interest because most schools get paid by day of attendance. And so obviously if we have all these kids out, then it's not going to be good. Plus, kids get sick, then what happens to working parents like you, Gemma, and others? Now you're faced with the conundrum, now am I going to miss work to stay home with my kid or what? And of course, we saw many instances where parents just said, I'm just going to send the kid to school sick. And of course, then we got real problems. And there's so much that can be done to decrease the rate of these infections. There'll be some that say, well, it's really good for these kids to get these infections because it builds up their immunity. That is not a good argument. First of all, the immunity to many of these viruses is very temporary. And so you're taking mostly risk and little benefit. So we should not celebrate when our kids get infected. We should make efforts to improve air handling so that we can decrease the transmission of these viruses. And of course, those with little kids or grandkids know that they're coming home and then they're infecting the adults.
Right, exactly. Dr. Pate, Martha sent this in. She says, it has now been 4 months since I got the bivalent COVID booster. I'm reading that advice is to get boosted if it has been 4 to 6 months since your last booster or vaccine. So should I now get a second bivalent booster? I'm over 65 and I've had all five COVID shots and I have not had a COVID infection.
Well, fantastic. Congratulations, first of all, for getting fully up to date with your shots. And then second of all, avoiding infection, because we know there are a number of bad things that can happen from the infection. So congratulations. But no, the recommendation at this point in time is only one bivalent booster. And the good news is while you're not well protected against getting infected, unfortunately, these variants are very immune evasive and very transmissible. You are protected for what appears to be a very lengthy period of time from getting severely ill. So you've done everything you can to protect yourself. Now just focus on not getting infected, you know, being careful about who you're around, in what setting, how's the air handling, you're wearing a mask, those kind of things, but no more shots at the moment. Stand by. I think there will be a recommendation next year or this year for you to get something, but I don't expect it soon.
And then Ken wrote in saying, my wife and I received the latest vaccine in September, our fifth total shot in the series. Our daughter got hers in December, so thinking she was better protected, but we were all exposed on at a New Year's Eve party, and my wife and I got COVID. Our daughter did not. Do you think the vaccine has an effective life of only a couple of months, and is it waning?
So what we need to be clear about, and this gets muddled, is what a vaccine can do. There are several things that a vaccine can do. One is protect you from getting severely ill. That bivalent vaccine does a really good job of that. And as you saw, apparently from your question, it doesn't sound like you did get very sick. So that's number one, it does a great job. Then the next question is, well, will it prevent me from getting infected and being symptomatic? The answer until this year was it did a reasonably good job. But with these new variants, it's not doing as well. And so that's why I was just telling the last listener in response to the question, good news, you're very protected from getting severely ill, but you're not well protected from getting infected. And I think this is the biggest mistake that people who are vaccinated are making, is and through no fault of their own, because I think the CDC messaging has been horrible, thinking that, well, if I'm fully vaxxed, and especially if I got the bivalent, then I'm protected. That's only half correct. You're protected from dying. You're protected from being hospitalized. You're protected from getting very, very sick, but you're not well protected from getting infected. So you still need to do all those things. So I've had all of my vaccines, and but when I go out and I'm around people I don't know, I wear my N95 mask. I'm very careful about picking and choosing where I go. I still take efforts to avoid getting infected.
So Dr. Pate, before we wrap things up today, I want to talk a little bit about some data that came out from the Federal Reserve Chair, Jerome Powell, also from the National Bureau of Economic Research, that connects the impact of the pandemic on our current workforce shortage. There's been so much chatter about this and you know, not being able to find workers, and it goes back to people just not wanting to work, et cetera. Well, the federal government is now estimating that COVID illnesses reduced the U.S. labor force by approximately 500,000 people. Now, approximately 250,000 of those, so half, were deaths of working age adults here in the United States. Two other groups that contributed to the reduction in... Go ahead, Dr. Pate.
Oh, no. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Jim. No, this is really important for us to understand, because we have seen that we've had problems with the workforce, and then we see how that impacts our economy. And so I think that there's an important lesson here, that when we deal with public health threats, we need to keep in mind that the best response for our economy is the best response for the pandemic. We all remember that Sweden took a approach that, you know, they wanted to keep their economy open, so they didn't do restrictions. Well, you can compare them to their neighboring countries that did take restrictions, and Sweden did financially worse. And they're having higher death rates, than way higher than any of their neighbors. And so it's not a great strategy to not take care of both. And you're exactly right. Finally, we've got the data. Now, these data only go through July. So this is actually the data that we're hearing about is actually an underestimate because we know we had a lot more disease since then. But you're right. About 250,000 working age people have died from COVID. And while there's so much discussion about, well, it's old people that die. Well, if you look at excess mortality, it affects every age group. Yes, disproportionately is going to be the older folks, but there are plenty of younger people that die. And in fact, 250,000 of our workforce. The other thing that you were starting to say when I interrupted you was that there's also two other things. One is, and we've talked about this many times, that there are a lot of people out there with long COVID. And some of those people with long COVID are so severely affected that they had to drop out of the workforce or they can't work as many hours. Now, these are not slackers. These are not people taking advantage of something. These are people who physically cannot do the work anymore, who can barely even do housework or get around their homes. And so they're severely impacted. But a lot of those people had to drop out of the workforce. And then the third point that you were going to mention was, and I think we've all seen this, we saw people who thought about retiring, but decided to go ahead and do it early because of the pandemic.
Right. I find this this information very interesting because, as we mentioned, this did come from the Federal Reserve Chair as well as the National Bureau of Economic Research, because it does show how impacted, you know, our labor force was and is still being impacted by the effects of the pandemic. And now we have just those real solid numbers. We have data to back this up and how our economy is still trying to recover from this.
Well, absolutely right. And I keep, you know, I'm one of these people that keep on hoping for the very best. And I hope we learn. I fear we will not have learned our lesson from this. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Pate, as always, we just appreciate you so much for coming in. Glad you're on the mend too and feeling better. So, of course, we will see you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks, Dr. Pate. And remember, if you have questions in regards to public health, especially our new listeners over in Eastern Idaho at KISU-FM, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate will, of course, be on next week answering any of your questions in regards to public health. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.